Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon and good evening. Thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to inform you that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, operator.
Liz, we have just been joined by Ken Stubbs and by Dan.
Lovely. Oh, thanks, Dan. Okay, everyone, I'm a very poor substitute for both Bruce and for Philip, but I wanted to just run through a couple of things that we wanted to do on the call tonight. I expect that the call will last for about an hour, unless anyone wishes to go any longer than that. There's a couple of things that I wanted to draw your attention to. First of all, I'm hoping that everybody has received the draft final report, which was released on the 14th of November, and to ensure that you had also received the ICANN staff discussion points, which was released at the same time. And Christina, Christina particularly, who's new on the council, Christina, have you found your way around the draft documents yet, and do you have what you need?
Yes to both.
Good. Lovely. Okay. The main objective of the meeting is to answer any questions you may have about either of those documents and to elicit further questions which could be addressed in the Sao Paulo meeting, and to ensure everyone's ready for the new TLD's public forum, which will take place during the Sao Paulo sessions. The other things that I would like to cover, and it's only from my perspective, and I'm happy to add things to the list, is three elements. One is about application processes and the quantum of fees and the evaluation phase. And I would appreciate very much further discussion by the group about the distinction between policy and operational matters. And of course, everyone realizes that on Sunday of this week, we're going to be having a working session with the operational legal staff in Sao Paulo. The second thing is selection criteria and allocation methods. The distinction between selection criteria and allocation methods are quite complicated at the moment. And then any questions to address people's concerns about the Sao Paulo new TLDs forum and the connection to between the GAC forum and the other discussions that we'd be holding, particularly with respect to the IDN working group. I'd just also note that a number of comments have been received by different groups. Those that we already have in place are from the IPC, and thank you to Caroline Ciccone for sending those in, and for Uta. From the BC, Philippa sent me some comments, Chuck has sent comments, and Werner and Dirk have sent comments. And if anyone has any other responses to the documentation, then I'd be grateful if you'd send those so they can be added to the binder of materials that will be distributed to the group on Sunday afternoon.
And Liz, it's Marilyn. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Because the BC is working through some additional comments, I don't know if we're going to get them. We may get them concluded, but we might not get them done in time for the binder. Should we, in that case, just bring copies with us?
If you wouldn't mind, just bring one piece of paper or two sheets or whatever it is, and then I'll ensure that they are copied and added to the thing. What we're trying to do is bind everything in one place. So, for example, the new TLD stuff, the PDP Febo 6 stuff, and the IDN working group stuff is all being set up in separate binders. So just do your best. Get all the stuff that Philip has released already has been included today in the binder. So if you have additional material, then that will just be an addendum for the meeting, and presumably you'll have that prior to Monday if you're going to have it at all. Is that right?
Liz, I have a question as well.
Yes, sure. Chuck, go through the questions first.
I have reviewed, I think, all of the comments that have been distributed so far, the recent ones, and certainly respect and encourage, you know, all the constituencies to do that. But one of the things I see happening that I'm concerned about, it looks like there's some of the comments are trying to get us to go backwards and reconsider some issues that I thought we were already past as far as the committee is concerned. For example, the sponsored TLDs only. Is there thinking that we're going to go back and revisit some of those in this?
Chuck, can I take that question on notice until we deal with the others? Because then I want to take the group through the ICANN staff discussion points document and the document
that would be fine.
if you don't mind. Would you mind if I did that first?
No.
Okay.
No problem.
And Liz, I'm sorry, did you do a roll call already? I know you
yes.
did the recording.
What I'd like to do, Glenn, is if you wouldn't mind, would you mind doing a roll call? And just so that everyone knows, I've asked Glenn to transcribe the call because it's very difficult to run a call and keep up with the notes that people want me to take to incorporate into an updated version of the final report, which is our main goal, to get that done after the South Carolina meeting. So, Glenn, if you wouldn't mind just doing a quick roll call, please.
Yes, certainly. On the line, we have Dirk Krishnanovsky, Werner Staub, Chuck Gomes, and Ray Fassett, who are theoretically observers. For the staff, we have Denise, Olaf, and yourself. Then we have Tony Harris, Marilyn Cade, Christina Rosette, who is the new IPC member, Ken Stubbs, Dan Halloran and Craig Schwartz, Thomas Keller, Uta Decker, and Alistair Dixon.
Thank you very much to all those people who've joined since we started. Were there any further questions about what we wanted to cover in this hour-long call?
I did just have one other quick question.
Yep, go ahead.
It's merely for informational purposes. And I assume because Craig and others are on the call, when we say introduction of new top-level domains, ICANN staff discussion points, these are intended to be questions to us from the operational staff. Is that right?
There are a collation of questions across the organization, Marilyn. And I have to say that I want to put on record my thanks to the other colleagues in the Marina del Rey office who have been very, very involved in putting that document together. And I'll step the group through how that was all done and the main points of that document as we go. That'll be the first thing that we do. But yes, if you wish to address questions specifically to Craig or to Dan, then go right ahead.
I think the fact that Craig is on the phone has actually answered one of my questions, which is how do we go back to the operational staff? And so I thank Craig for being on the call and making it easy back to it.
Sure. The other thing that everyone should know is that Craig and me and others in the internal group have a regular Wednesday call for implementation issues, and much of what we discuss is goes around the houses before we have a public call like this. Were there any other questions that anyone wanted to raise before we start?
Sorry, Matt mentioned, Liz, the apologies from Kurt.
Yep.
He cannot be on the call because he's got another call at the same time.
Lovely. Thank you, Glenn. Okay. If we turn then to the two documents that we have going into the Sao Paulo meeting, the first is the draft final report, which is the representation of the committee's work so far. And I want to thank everybody for all the work that they have done on that. The other document is the ICANN staff discussion points. And if you've all printed out those documents, I want to turn straight to page 2 of that document, section 7. And section
I'm sorry, this is the staff comment, right?
Yes. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hi.
Yes, it is a staff discussion points document.
Fine. I've got questions on 7, actually.
Sure. Okay. What section 7 on page 2 of the staff discussion document does is set out where I think we need further clarification, and that is quite a comprehensive couple of pages of things. So perhaps, Tony, if you want to ask your question, I can try to answer it straight away.
Yes. On 7.2, there is reference to independent experts intervening, and I'm a little alarmed at this concept because, I mean, independent experts can be tremendous personalities of great fame and renown, but if they're not really thoroughly familiar with what's involved in a GTLD and how how this may perform in once it's released, but what guarantee do we have that they won't shoot down a valid application just because their business education tells them, well, this might not be a good idea.
Yeah. Tony, I really hear that question, and I bought a lottery ticket today in the vain hope that I win the lottery and I never have to answer these questions again. But seriously, though, these are exactly the kinds of questions we need to address as we're, first of all, at a constituency level. So, for example, you may well have comments on the staff discussion points or indeed on the paper on the full committee report itself that would flesh those out. And you will see very, very specifically in section 7.12, and it says the draft recommendation suggests the creation of new tasks, including the establishment of several expert or independent panels. And there's a couple of questions that we need to answer there, not on this call, but certainly with respect to discussing the ICANN staff discussion points and the new TLD's report in the context of the Sao Paulo meeting. And Tony,
well, actually, 712.2 says that talks about experts who can advise on the string selection.
Exactly.
That's something that also alarms me.
Indeed. And frankly, Tony, what we need to do is to drill right down to the points that still concern people, and we need to go back to the work of the committee, which is represented in the draft final report, and say, where do we need to seek further clarity on the recommendations? What other questions do we need to ask? What things do we need to put in place to make sure that we don't overburden an application process with a series of implementation issues which are way too comprehensive and way too expensive and way too complicated for us to actually implement? And that's why it's very, very good that Craig is on the call.
Liz, would you put me in the queue, please?
Yes, Ken. Any further questions in relation to those particular sections? And Ken, you're first. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'd like to be in the...
Marilyn?
And Chuck, please.
And Chuck. Ken, go ahead.
Oh, and by the way, Brett, I joined...
Brett, hello.
5 or 10 minutes ago. I didn't want to interrupt, but...
Thank you. Did you want to be in the queue, or are you just telling me you joined?
I'm just using this as an opportunity to say hello.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. Okay. So, Ken, Marilyn, and Chuck... Please, Ken, go ahead.
I think more importantly than getting down to the actual nuts and bolts of the composition of a lot of these independent panels and so forth we're talking about, I think we need to make sure we have a process that ensures that the selection of the independent panel is done in not just an open and transparent deal, but in a process that ensures credibility for any decisions that the panel makes. I think you could probably use it as an example of at least how I feel it should be done right, the selection of the panel and the chairman for the registry services, the one that Lyman chairs. And I think if we ensure that we have a process that gives us people that, in effect, do understand this the process, do understand the impacts of the decision they're making, because I would share the same concern that Tony would have about this and that you mentioned as well.
Sure. Thank you, Ken. Marilyn, would you like to go ahead?
I thought Chuck was next.
Oh, beg your pardon. Chuck, go ahead.
Sure. Not a problem. I thought you were, Marilyn, but it's okay.
It's the chair's prerogative to pick.
We won't fight over that. Tony, I do think your comments are very important, and I think one of the things that we've emphasized on this committee all the way through is that there needs to be objective, measurable criteria and minimization of any subjective evaluation. And I think one of the things, to the extent that we do use experts or committees or whatever they be in this process, it's critical that objective criteria be given to those people in their task. If it's left wide open for them to decide without giving them some criteria upon which they can measure, then I think we have a problem. And what you're concerned about, Tony, would be that my fears would even be larger.
Thank you, Chuck. Marilyn?
I guess I'm going to offer two thoughts. One is we did do a significant amount of discussion that led to the creation of these recommendations. But we also did recognize in that discussion that we did need to think through more detail along the criteria or the kind of like the what are the elements that these decisions would be made on. And I do think, Tony, in our discussions, I believe we did make an effort to recognize that we are looking for evaluators with the kind of expertise that that can, in fact, be relevant to the decision and the role that they're playing. I think one of the things that happened when we captured the recommendations, and I saw this, that it looked like we were saying there would be, I understand somebody suggested there would be seven different kinds of experts. I don't think that was ever the intent in the discussion. And so it's good to have this brought out and gone into in more detail to determine where the ICANN staff would feel the need to turn to a set of experts, what are the general categories of experts, and can that be done through the creation of a flexible standing panel, something along the lines that's been discussed, that has been implemented in the existing, the new registry services, with different kinds of expertise on the standing panel, but as is happening with that panel right now, five or six people are being tapped, not all 20 of them, based on any particular new registry service application and based on the characteristics or of expertise that are needed. So that was certainly in my mind as we were thinking about it, but I think it deserves, when we get together in São Paulo, more discussion and more elaboration.
Could I follow up on that?
Yeah, can I also be joined to the queue, please, Liz?
So, Chuck, yes, and Alice, is there anyone else who wants to join at this point?
Ray will join.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, and Marilyn, I think you're right on that. I just wanted to add one thing. I think also that there was not really intent on the committee's part to define a very rigid structure for doing some of these things, but rather to create some flexibility for staff to devise mechanisms like you're suggesting, where it might be a standing panel that's used for different things. It wasn't rigid, I don't think. Is that a correct interpretation of what we did?
I'll just speak for myself as an individual participant. That was, I thought we were creating a kind of a framework.
Yes. That states it much better than I did.
Different words, but same intent.
Yes.
I'd like to come back to that framework construct in a second. Alistair, would you like to go ahead?
Thanks, Liz. I just think there's another element that I think is important to address the concerns that Tony raised. And as well as what Chuck said about the importance of having objective criteria, I think it's important that the decisions of the panel are transparent, so that all parties can see how the objective criteria have been applied. I think that's an important check on ensuring that that the criteria are objectively applied and ensuring that basically the panel is doing its job. So I just want to ensure that there's that element included as well.
Thank you, Alistair. Ray?
I'd like to agree that, you know, independent panels bring a degree of complexity and also agree that the objective, overriding objective, is to bring objectivity to the process. So with that said, I think it's important to provide scope in what is string contention versus what is string opposition. String contention has to do with phonetically or visually confusing to a user, whereas there can be all kinds of reasons why some party somewhere may want to oppose. My understanding is that the purpose of the panels was to really focus in on the concept of string contention, when that should arise for ICANN staff, as opposed to a bunch of panels to try and get through string opposition.
Thanks, Ray. Could I just bring the group back to the things that will happen, I think, in the new TLDs forum and then in the working sessions that we'll have in São Paulo? the intent of Section 7.12 was to look from a staff perspective at the way in which the recommendations were fleshed out in an operational sense. What it really means, though, is that if you turn then to the big document, which is the way in which the committee have represented their work, it requires that we go back to, for example, term of reference 2 recommendations, and think very clearly about the language that we use there. So, for example, the committee might wish to think about the elements and the recommendations where they say, this is a policy recommendation and this must look like this. This should be like that. It will be like this. Rather than, for example, the rather less strident language of this may and this could and this may possibly. So I'd urge each of the commenters that have spoken up in this particular point to go back to those sets of recommendations and say, and look clearly at the impact of the recommendations as they stand on, for example, implementation and cost of the proposed recommendations. And that's the same for each of the sections that we have outlined in the staff discussion points. The other element that we need to take into account, of course, is that these recommendations in draft are going to be exposed to the comment of the broader internet using public and the other advisory committees and the supporting organizations, and they'll be exposed to the confirmation of further constituency input. And I just urge each of you to, if you're constituency representatives, to go back to your constituency and to make sure that the positions that we have represented in the committee report are the ones that you're happy with as a constituency position. Were there any further questions on that part, on selection criteria, section 2?
This is Christina. Can I be added to the queue?
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Who that was? Who was
this
that?
Is Christina.
Yes. Anyone else for the queue? Go ahead, Christina.
I was hoping I could get some clarification about, in terms of reference to, selection criteria 2.2, particularly with regard to grants and the system of grants that is discussed in connection with the application fees. And the first question I would have is, it's not entirely clear to me from how this is worded whether a recommendation has been made to go forward with a grant process or whether that is still under consideration.
Speaking from my side, Christina, it's still very much under consideration. It's
okay.
Still draft recommendations.
Right.
The person who suggested those kinds of options, Malachi Chungo from the NCUC, and
mm-hmm.
is not on the call. And Glenn, could I just check whether any of the NCUC reps are on the call?
No. Malachi is sick, and
right.
Robin Gross has excused herself. She has got a conflict with another call, so
sure.
She is.
Thanks. Thanks, Glenn. Christina, I suggest that what we should do is specifically note your question
mm-hmm.
and specifically go back to those that have suggested those particular elements of the recommendations and double-check. It proposes from ICANN's side, as we've outlined in the staff discussion points, many additional, I don't want to use the word burdens, but I use that in the most positive term, but it imposes upon the organisation some significant responsibilities, if that is actually what the committee intends, and I think that we need to test those recommendations a little further.
Okay.
Can I get in queue on this point, Tony Harris?
Yes, thank you.
And can I get in the queue as well? Liz?
Christina, were you done? Or
well, no, I had a follow-up point, simply because it seems to me that one point that I think we need to consider in evaluating whether or not to recommend that grants be available is to make sure that we're clear as to how far down the line those grants would have to go. For example, if it is decided to implement a grant system for purposes of sharing or fee shifting for applicant burden, would that same applicant, if there's a contested auction, so to speak, if you ended up with that kind of situation, would that same applicant then be eligible for an additional grant to allow them to compete in the auction? And if so, where do you put, what dollar ceiling do you put on it? I think these are just issues that I think we need to make sure we've kind of clearly fleshed out. And I'm not, again, being new, it doesn't seem to me that has happened yet.
Christina, thank you for that. It's very valuable to have fresh eyes at this point in the process. So could I urge you to take that up in the conversations at Sao Paulo?
Sure.
And could I also urge you to discuss those particular things and to understand completely what the intentions of those that proposed those recommendations were? And
okay.
Just so that you know, it's Milwaukee and Robin Gross from the NCUC.
Okay.
And I'd urge you to get in touch with them when prior to being in Sao Paulo,
sure,
to make sure that you've got all the information you need.
Sure.
Tony, did you want to go ahead?
Yes, you've got this in point 7.6 in the staff comments or considerations,
yes,
on this about grants. And I think I've made this point before, but basically everybody knows I'm going to be at the gates with an application and representing a nonprofit entity, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable about giving out grants happily to everybody, because it doesn't seem all that fair, perhaps, to what happened to previous applicants. And also, it does pave the way for people who could say, well, it's a hit-and-miss thing. If I get through, fine, it won't cost me anything.
Yep.
And you're going to have an awful waste of time, a lot of applications that possibly don't meet qualification at the end of the road. And what are you going to gain by this? It would be much better if people had to pay for the application fee, and you could say, well, if you qualify, if you're selected, you get through the selection process, then you could apply for a 40% or 50% rebate or something, because of the fact that you're a nonprofit entity and for the public welfare or something, and do it that way.
Tony, just a point of clarification there. Presumably you're not speaking as then an ISP representative. You're speaking as somebody who's not dissimilar to Werner or Dirk, who are very interested observers in the process. It's really important that you put those points on paper and send them to me so that they can be considered in the set of parameters around discussing these particular elements, because we have to balance a number of competing objectives. That's what the board will be expecting of me to do in the production of a board report.
Yeah, fair enough. But speaking as an ISP rep, I think our industry would also be happier if it isn't all that easy to just throw things in and see if I'm lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes to being really having a solid case, solid backing for what you're doing. And some muscle behind it, okay?
Thanks, Tony. Marilyn, you were also in the queue. Would you like to go ahead?
Yeah. The business constituency in the past has expressed concern about the issue of registries falling over because they don't have sufficient financial resources to operate through lean time, or they don't have sufficient technical resources, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is probably a little bit consistent with Tony's last statement that I think we'll be very, very cautious about subsidy models, and instead we'll support the idea that through consistent terms and conditions and through stable processes and transparent processes, as much as possible, there'll be a known fee and a amount of time that can that applicants can adhere to. The idea that we would create a subsidy model that I can have to operate is probably not going to receive support from the business constituency. And our observance would be that's putting ICANN in a ICANN itself in a role that is far beyond what its core competencies, running a foundation, or even diluting and deterring all of us from the work that we really should be doing.
Thanks, Marilyn. Were there any other points in relation to either that element or others that people wanted to bring up?
That element, meaning Section 7?
Section 7, yep.
Section 710, I'd like to comment on.
Yep, go ahead. Anyone else would like to be there? And that's the section which refers to the draft-based contract that is provided as part of the
correct
documentation.
And I want to be back in the queue to ask a question later.
Sure. Chuck and Marilyn and anyone else on...
Yes, I have more questions, but I'll get in queue by different points.
Thank you. This is in relation, just so that if people don't have the document in front of them, this relates to Section 7.10 in the ICANN staff discussion document about base contract content. And I've got Chuck and Marilyn and Tony. Chuck, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I think that as a committee, the most important point we wanted to make was that a draft-based contract be available as part of the RFP so that any applicants have the best possible picture of what they're getting into and that contract not be provided after the RFP is out. So in my mind, and I think the registry constituency feels this way, it's not so critical that the base contract be a part of the report itself, although that would certainly be nice, but it is critical that it be available when an RFP goes out and not later than that. And really, in my opinion, ICANN has established a big part of that base contract through recent contracts that have been negotiated. There's been a lot of similarities and so forth. Whether all of those carry through or not is another issue, but it doesn't seem to be too unreasonable to expect that, at least at the release of an RFP.
Thank you, Chuck. Marilyn?
I support what Chuck just said, but my question is a slightly more general question. There's a couple of places where I can see that there may be, for instance, one of the contributions that the BC may make, or it may come as an individual, is an elaboration on 2.5.2.5, which is about reserve names. And my question is a more general question. I refer you also to 4.5, which says there could be a clear sanctions process. I don't think I saw... I may have missed it. I don't think I saw a question in the staff discussion point that asked for more information about the sanctions process. And
Marilyn, did you mean a compliance with the contract? Is that?
Sorry, I'm reading 4.5 in the on page 27.
Yep. Okay, thank you for pointing me to it.
Yeah, it says there should be a clear sanctions process outlined within the base contract, blah, 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 blah. But I didn't see any reference in the staff discussion about what we had in mind. And
sure.
That would seem to me to be one of the issues where, in going into more detail on our upcoming meeting on Sunday, we ought to at least address that.
Marilyn, that's a question for Dan, and I've got some other things that he'll want to refer to in a second, so perhaps I'll just finish this queue and then enable Dan to speak if he wishes.
I was just pointing out some areas where, and I think you did, on 4.10, which is on page 28, where we suggested there should be a consistent approach with respect to registry fees.
Yep.
That may be another one where we need to ask the question, and you may have, about what did we intend by that.
Sure.
But so I would point out those two things and then ask the question of where we may be proposing, because as we've all reviewed this, we have seen another area that we think needs a bit of elaboration. How do you see... you had said that you were going to send forward the BC comments, the IPC comments, comments from the registry constituency that Chuck provided?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that would be, can I just verify that's your suggestion for any of us who might see something that we think needs to also be elaborated on or considered, we should just give that to you in written form?
Indeed, that would be terrific. Very, very, very helpful. It doesn't matter that it doesn't make it into the bound compendium of things that will be taken forward for the Sao Paulo meeting. It matters that people have got it written down and is given to me, and then I put it into my vast lot of binders, and it eventually filters its way through into the report. It also means that I have sets of questions that Bruce and I have spent quite a bit of time preparing for the public forum, and we float those questions in a number of different ways to ensure that we get a diverse set of feedback. So if you could send whatever you wish to me as soon as you can, that would be lovely.
Okay.
Thank you. Tony, you were also in the queue for that one.
Not for this point. 7.5, 7.8, and 7.11.
Why don't you just go ahead then? You start another queue. Go ahead.
Okay. 7.5 is about options.
Yep. Go ahead.
That's something I am dead against. We've talked about the concept of Me Too in strings and how this is undesirable. If you have options, you're opening the gate to Me Too applications. And you may have people, organizations who have really done, they've done years of preparation for this, stepping up to the gate, and somebody who's heard about it is there too because he's got his fee in his hand. So if you don't take, if you don't evaluate competing string proposals on the merits of the support they have, when I say support, if they're a sponsored TLD, the support from the community they're representing,
mm-hmm.
or they say they're representing,
mm-hmm.
and by support I mean signed and sealed letters that are completely solid, somebody who has perhaps the more money or a latecomer could come up, could walk away with the award.
Tony, that's been a great bone of contention for several months now, and I'm pretty sure that you're aware of Ross and Milton and others who've looked at rather simpler ways of resolving string contention. And we're actually talking about string contention, which is competing applications for the same string.
That's right.
I would be very grateful if in Sao Paulo you would like to flesh out your ideas about that particular section, because it's something that the staff have spent considerable time on, balancing the parameters between objective, timely, binding, finished, low-risk solutions for determining the end of a problem, and the problem being two applicants or five applicants or 10 applicants want the same string. We have to have some simple way of resolving that problem. But I understand your hesitation. You had two other points that you wished to make on separate elements?
Yeah, it's very short. 7.8.
Yep.
The policy recommendations might require public posting of string applications in internationally recognized publications as part of a notification process. Potentially, the applicant would pay for the publication. I've never heard of this before. I admit I wasn't at the last meeting. I was in the Belgium meeting. But my point is anybody who came before us didn't have to go through this. So it doesn't seem all that fair. And what's wrong with having it published in the ICANN website and that being sufficient?
Can I get in the queue, Liz, to ask a clarifying question about...
On 7.8 or on something else?
It's on 7.8. And
sure.
Then I'm going to go back.
Okay. Sure, Marilyn, no problem. Tony, I just want to address your question there. You'll be aware that when we did the new TLDs process, we did an international call for papers, and I don't remember you being in the Washington meeting, but we had 8 presentations from the 11 of the respondents that we received for the call for expert papers. We've learned that the ICANN website is not sufficient as a notification methodology for ensuring sufficient quote-unquote, advertising of a decision. And 7.8 was particularly suggested to deal with the way in which governments might wish to respond, and not very many governments, I would think, log regularly onto the ICANN website to look what we are all doing. And this is a suggestion that was used to ensure that the way in which we resolved string contention was fair and was broadly advertised, and it needs further discussion. So I understand your hesitancy. I have to say, though, that just because we haven't done it in the past doesn't mean to say we wouldn't do it in the future.
could I get in that queue on 782?
Thanks, Chuck. And what we're trying to do is look for best practice procedures for dealing with notifications. And I'm sure that you'd be aware of, for example, shareholder notifications and large debt notifications are actually regularly advertised in the international press as a way of fulfilling shareholder requirements. And that was one way that we had come up with ensuring that there wasn't string contention and that people couldn't claim that ICANN hadn't done its job in sufficiently advertising the process. But I understand why you're hesitating.
Well, Liz, very shortly.
Sure.
I mean, this could take you off the table. I mean, that could be more expensive than the application fee of $45,000. Okay. If you really did it internationally.
Exactly, and that's what we want to. This is the reason why we're posing the questions. We want to see where there is a pushback, where there is a problem, where there is some analysis that needs to be done. And for example, anyone who watched the advertising process for the new TLD's call for expert papers, that international advertising campaign cost $45,000 US.
Oh, thank you.
We've done the costing on it. And just to address your point about $45,000 application fee, there's certainly no guarantee that the application fee for new TLDs would be $45,000. Marilyn, you want to...
Yes, would you put me in the queue too, please, Ken, sub on this issue?
Yes, I've got Marilyn, Chuck, and then Ken. Anyone else?
Yes, Ray.
Thank you, Ray. Marilyn, go ahead.
Sure. My comment is I think it's a general comment to the entire document and maybe a suggestion for how we might think about working on this document. I think we may be putting the operational staff at a disadvantage by filtering everything through the policy staff, so I apologize for that. But for instance, what I see in the document is, in some cases, something that I, having been at all the meetings and been heavily involved in this, I'm not always, as I read this particular document, I'm not always in agreement with, I feel that there is a strong need for further dialogue between the operational staff and the policy process, not just this paper, but a much more robust discussion. One question that I would have to the staff, for instance, is maybe a better question to us would be when there is potential strain contention and the policy recommendation might indicate that a public that more visibility of the applications is needed on an international basis, what are the different kinds of affordable options that we would recommend to be explored and forward, again, predictable way so that the applicant would know there's a potential of additional cost and what the range of that cost may be, because I do agree advertising fees can be extremely high. So part of it may just be how this is worded. But secondly, I do have a question about RFC 1591. I love RFC 1591. It's my favorite RFC, but I'm not sure I understand the reference to it here. And then secondly, on 7.5, the way 7.5 is ordered, it appears to give initial preference to the idea that options are a preferred method to resolve contentious issues or scarce resource issues. In fact, there was no agreement to that within the task force. And the second part of that sentence, these suggestions need to be balanced with the views of others who contend that detailed comparative evaluations are the only way to make choices between applications. I think we need to be really careful in how we convey things in a very neutral way.
Marilyn, I appreciate your point there, and I take responsibility for that because I drafted it. What I was trying to say was there was still disagreement, and that disagreement need not have come on the public list, numbers of people have come to me and said, we should resolve this in this particular way, and I've said, well, we need to go back to the group and we need to determine what they want. What I was trying to represent there was that there was two sets of a continuum that needed to be balanced between the two, and it was quite a difficult process. I wasn't meaning at all to intend that there was only one way of doing things, and that, or there might be a choice between two things. So further clarification there is helpful, and I appreciate now that I've reread it as you were speaking that it might have read that way, and I didn't intend it to be to be that bold.
Thanks. And then my final comment is just on 7.4.
Yep.
Clarification is required regarding reserve names to ensure global and multicultural considerations are taken into account when developing any reserve names list.
Mm-hmm.
Can someone point me? I agree totally. I'm not in disagreement. I'm assuming that is in reference to, and we did just really begin this discussion, and there's a very, very light placeholder under 2.5.2.5 on page 11. Is that what the staff would, is that where the staff is referencing?
Yes, it is. The reserve names list is a very, very interesting issue, and I think it gets us, and for example, Avery is not on the call, but Avery has been a very strong advocate of no reserve list at all, but we know that that actually doesn't exist in existing contracts.
I haven't seen that posting on the list.
Oh, no, what I meant was she's been a very active discussant to say there shouldn't be any names that are reserved in any way because that is censorship. So that's one end of the discussion, and I don't mean to paraphrase Avery's views in any way, but there's further discussion that needs to take place about, this is a very general and diplomatic point, about the way in which, for example, governments or countries or linguistic communities or religious communities might wish to have their names represented and reserved.
Right.
So this is not just about,
right,
for example, .exe or .localhost or .example or .whatever it happens to be, like .icann or .iana or .afrinic or whatever it happens to be. This is a much broader discussion about whether we would provide guidance to applicants about names that really, frankly, are off the table.
Right. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
No problem. I had Chuck and then Ken and Ray.
Okay. Tony, it seems to me that your concern on 7.8 at least partially would be mitigated depending on the timing of when the posting of the strings occurred. I don't think that posting should occur until after the end of the application process, after that process closes. And if that's the case, then it wouldn't be possible for somebody to jump in because the string was posted and then compete with you in that regard.
I wasn't making that point on 7.8. That was about the auctions.
Well, okay. I thought you were concerned about the public posting of the string.
No, the public posting of the string, my concern here is cost.
Because
the applicant would
concern.
Pay for the
okay.
publication. And Liz just said, yeah, we figured, you know, advertising would be $45,000.
Okay.
Which was great news. I'm ecstatic about that.
But am I correct, though, that there wouldn't be any public posting until the close of the application process?
Yep, that's right, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
Ken, I have you, Ken, and then Ray.
I think I have a relatively simple solution to Tony's concern. Basically, rather than having each individual applicant post in the internationally recognized publications, the best approach would be to have at the beginning of the process, ICANN post in international publications the fact that the authoritative site for information on a new strings is whatever ICANN deems it to be, their website or something like that. Then all you would need to do at that point in time would be the string contentions would then be string applications to get posted to that specific site, but what you would have would be ICANN doing the publicity work out front of the applications, and at that point in time, if some government misses it, that's their issue, you know, and not specifically a cost burden on any application. There.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken, for saving us a whole bunch of money. Ray, did you have further comments you made on, you want to make on that part?
Yeah, 7.8. I think it's important to be careful not to mix and match terms unless I'm misunderstanding, which is to determine whether there is potential string contention. The only way, as I understand it, the string contention can occur is if two or more applicants file for the same string or file for a string that is phonetically or verbally or visually confusing to an existing TLD string. It may be better worded to say to determine whether there's potential string opposition. Because that's not the same as contention in the spirit of the recommendation.
No, it's not the same.
Oh.
It's not the same. And I just want to, and this is a negative example. For example, Ray Fassett and his group proposed .book, .book. There's no other applicant. There's no string. There's no contention for .book, and I just happen to be looking at my bookshelf. But everyone hates Ray Fassett, and they absolutely don't want him to be in control of any other single registry. So they're going to vote, and they're going to call every single congressman and every single senator, and they're going to oppose Ray Fassett being in control of any other registry at all ever.
Liz.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's
oh, wait.
That's the difference between
this is just a point of order. This is an example since this is being transcribed.
It is an example. Thank you, Marilyn. It's an example, and I'm using Ray specifically because Ray understands what I'm doing and he knows what I mean. Ray, do you understand the distinction now that I'm making between contention and opposition?
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that if the entire TLD round is well publicized by ICANN, that this is happening and so forth internationally up front, then that sets the community on notice to be paying attention, if you will, and then if they see something they want to oppose, they can oppose. But that's different than placing the burden on the applicant to see if there is contention, because contention is defined as phonetically or visually confusing to an existing string or competing applicant string. That's my only point.
Ray, what I'll do is I'll take an action item on that to make some better definition in the committee's document about the distinction between contention and opposition, because I think it's necessary to spell it out.
Great,
and I will do that.
Thanks.
I'm conscious, everyone, that it is 2058, and I wanted to take into account any other points that anyone or questions anyone had to make, either on the staff document or on the committee's document as it's drafted.
I have one.
Who was that?
Tony Harris.
Sorry, Tony, go ahead, Anyone else in the queue for that one?
I just had a comment about the very contentious issue of renewal, so I'd just like to...
So, Tony, Alistair, anyone else on any wrap-up points for either document? Tony, go ahead.
Okay. 7.11 considers for the first of the application cycles there should be a defined number of applications allowed through that system.
Yep.
In other words, explore the desirability of working to reduce the number of applications and limiting the number of approved applications during 2007, which is not a bad idea, but how are you going to do that and be fair?
You're going to answer that question, Tony?
No, I don't think so. I'm just wondering where this came from, because in the last round you had 10 applications, I believe.
Cool.
Which is not an inordinate number, really, and, I mean, how many would there be this time?
Well, Tony, we've been trying to actually answer that exact question so that we can do some very sensible scaling and fit-for-purpose application processing implementation, and Craig and I and others in the organization have been trying to work out the number of applications we think we might get. We can do a fairly good rough analysis, but we certainly can't get down to 10 to 15 or 50 to 100 or anything like that. And one thing that we certainly don't want to do is build a system that's designed for 10 and get 1,000. Or build a system for 1,000 and get 2. So we're doing a couple of things in parallel. One is we're trying to do some more market research, and the other is we're really trying to drill down to say, well, what happens if we get either end of the spectrum?
But wouldn't the size of the evaluation panel or participants be defined once you have the strings and you close the gate?
That's a question for Craig to answer. I doubt that he would be happy doing that from an implementation perspective. because it just doesn't provide us enough ramping up time to provide a system that is fit for purpose.
Plus, Tony, we have in the committee, I think, emphasized that we wanted ICANN to be geared up and ready to go on this, again, for timeliness.
Yeah, well, if I can speak up, Mrs. Craig, we've been trying to actually approach this process in two distinct sections. The first being, what do we need to do to create the system to run the project or run the round, as opposed to how do we actually run the round? So to the extent that panels of experts or firms hire to measure technical criteria, all of those structures need to be in place before the round starts, because once you have an application that maybe needs to be dealt with through one of these outside resources, it has to be in existence if this project is really to be timely. So the cart really does have to come before the horse on that part.
Thank you, Craig. Alistair, I had you also in the queue for dealing with a contentious thing.
Yes, Liz. I'm sorry to bring this up right at the end. I just wanted to draw attention to Philip's post of the BC position in relation to renewal expectancy. And just to note that we have refined our position in relation to renewal expectancy, and we're saying that there should be renewal expectancy for sponsored TLDs, but for all other TLDs, we are still in favour of competitive bids. And I'd just also like to make the comment that we are trying to ensure that there's a consistent approach in relation to this PDP, as opposed to, or as well as PDP 06. So I just wanted to draw that to everybody's attention. I imagine this is something that we would probably wish to discuss at Sao Paulo.
Could I follow up on that?
Thanks, Chuck. Go ahead.
This is another example where I think there's an effort to go backwards. We spent a lot of time on this, and granted there wasn't unanimity, but there was a strong enough support for the position that's stated. And to go backwards now, I don't think is a wise or prudent thing to do.
Thank you, Chuck.
Can I get in the queue on that?
Anyone else, Marilyn, and anyone else? Go ahead, Marilyn.
I think we have to be careful not to suggest that clarification is going backward. These are still draft comments that we were all out seeking further support and input from our constituencies. The clarification that Alistair has provided is a clarification that has been reviewed with the constituency. I'm aware, because I am part of PDP 06, that there is a question about the same topic in PDP 06, and our view has evolved to think that we need to have some understanding of consistency across renewals, and to ask the question of whether the policy processes that then are going to be implemented by the ICANN staff should in fact be consistent. And that is, some would say that could be viewed as going back, while we would say that is a clarification that we think this task force and the other task force to discuss, because staff are going to be in a position of having to implement whatever the consistent policy is.
And I have no problem with clarification of a constituency's position.
Thank you, Chuck. Everyone, I just wanted to now turn from the specifics of both the staff document and the committee document, and they are two distinct pieces of work, and I thank everyone for their commitment to the staff on the production of the staff discussion points and the committee on the work that they have produced in the draft final report. I just wanted to be sure that everyone is aware of what's taking place at the Sao Paulo meeting, so that we can be sure that we cover the work that needs to be done at the Sao Paulo meeting. Number one, on Sunday afternoon is a working session for the way in which the work of the group will play out during the week. Number two is...
I'm sorry, did you say when that is?
Sunday afternoon, I should have just opened this file with my calendar, but I didn't. Glenn, can you just tell me off the top of your head when the working session is on Sunday afternoon for the group?
The times haven't been put in stone yet because we're still waiting for Bruce and some details, but it will be Sunday.
But I need to raise the point, Liz, that you may not be aware of, that the Who Is Task Force has been, a commitment's been made to them that they won't meet until Monday afternoon because many of them are not arriving in time.
Sunday afternoon, Marilyn.
For Who Is, but
yes,
I think
for
Liz...
For Who Is, but this will probably be in the morning.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought Liz said PDPO 5 would be in the afternoon.
No, I beg your pardon, Marilyn. Let me just, there's a general GNSO Council working session. There'll be an implementation face-to-face meeting with the staff as well on Sunday, and that will be where we can discuss in more detail the elements that we brought up in the discussion points. On Monday afternoon, of course, there's the 2:30 to 4 o'clock session for the new TLD's forum. And then there's the remainder of the week on the constituency meetings and the GNSO public forum, again at which the new TLD's work will be brought up. There will also be, of course, the GNSO GAC working session that will take place. And Olof, are you still there? Olof? No, perhaps the mobile phone bill.
Off, yes.
The GAC... have apparently made some progress on the drafting of their public policy principles, and Olof and I were speaking about that the other day, and we'll be given more input on that. Just to round off Alice's point about the issues that he raised about registry renewal, the PDP FEBO 6 group will be meeting on Monday morning between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock to refine their draft policy recommendations. Is there anything else anyone wanted to ask about anything at all? Okay, thank you. I'll take silence as everyone is okay. Does everyone have all the documents that they need to either be discussing or in time to send the updated comments? Everyone knows where everything is and everyone knows what the documents contain.
I'm sorry, so we would be looking at a time frame then, or a timeline, when we get together on Sunday morning for when we might be thinking about publishing this for comment. I'm not expecting us that, but we'll be thinking X number of weeks after the Sao Paulo meeting or something like that?
Yeah, sure. My intention, Marilyn, is to work with the group to produce, because the final report is still in draft, and it's my intention to produce the final report to consideration by the council. I would expect the second council meeting in January, so that everyone has time to confirm their constituency positions, provide me any updated information, take into account the GAC input on public policy principles, take into account anything the CCNSO or the SAC or the RSAC might have about the technical criteria. And just before we finish, I draw your attention to section 8, which is regarding consultations with other supporting organizations. It is the intention of the staff to, of course, seek the advice of the Stability and Security Committee, and, of course, the GAC, and, of course, the CCNSO, on the impact of the draft recommendations as they stand. So, Marilyn, to go back to your point, I would expect that the draft final report as it stands is turned into a final report in the last week of January and discussed by the council. Once that's done, a public comment period is run, and the public comment period, that public comment period is the usual 21 days that we have. Any substantive comments that are taken into account there, and then I produce the board report in time for the Lisbon meeting in Portugal in March. Does that give you a bit of a closer idea about the timeline?
Thanks.
Any other questions from anyone else? Great. Could I also urge you just to send me any particular comments that you want included in the next day or so? I leave on Thursday for Sao Paulo and will be out of email contact on Thursday until Friday morning.
Thanks, Liz.
If there's no other comments, then I'll close the call. Thank you very much to everybody.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you. Bye. Take care. Travel safely, everybody.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.